Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box LaBeat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am Steven Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com, where you can find the best of lacrosse coverage. Right now, of course, focusing largely on the National Lacrosse League as we are in to the NLL Cup Finals. Great opening game for the Saskatchewan Rush as they win 16-9 over the Rochester Nighthawks in a game that was close for quite a while. Rochester up 4-3, and then there was a three-goal run by Robert Church that really seemed to turn the tide. My guest this week is Brian Shanahan. He is the color commentator for the series for the Twitter game of the week all year on the NLL, in the NLL, and on NLL TV, but the Twitter games of the week. And he has some great insights into what happened. We look taking a deep dive into that three-goal run by Robert Church, what went into it, some of the minutiae of how he is so successful at generating goals like the ones that he did there, and some of the small breakdowns from Rochester that Saskatchewan capitalized on. The Rush are so dangerous. Rochester did not play a horrible game. They weren't good. They weren't as good as they can be by any stretch of the imagination. We certainly expect the Nighthawks to come back and compete in game two. But what a job by the Rush, as we said, to take advantage of the opportunities they had. We talk about that. We talk about the game in depth, what to expect moving forward, both in this series and for Saskatchewan down the road, as they have set themselves up, if they can win this championship, to get a whole bunch. And they would have been very close to having four championships in a row if they can pull this one out. Again, far from a foregone conclusion. We expect the Nighthawks to battle back. But right now, Saskatchewan in the driver's seat. We will talk about all of that. And then we take a little detour. Brian Shanahan's son, Devlin, is a goalie with the Mimico Mountaineers in the Ontario Junior A League. Terrific league, a very competitive league this year with some amazing talent, exciting games. And they, of course, are working towards winning the league. Whoever wins the championship this year will head out to Calgary for the Minto Cup. And that should be a dandy. But right now we are talking about the way the OLA Junior A season is unfolding with Brian Shanahan. And, of course, lots of talk about the Champions, not the Champions Cup, the NLL Cup. That's going to happen now and then. But the National Lacrosse League Cup Finals are one game in. Brian Shanahan and I talk about it on Box LaBeat on NLL Radio. Joining me on Box LaBeat this week to talk about the NLL Finals, and we might slip a couple other topics in, Brian Shanahan, the color commentating voice of the Finals. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Stamper. It's good to be here.
So I want to talk about the sequence, because you look at this game that happened in game one, the sequence that of Robert Church scoring three goals in a 3-0-3 stretch just seemed like the turning point in the game. And to me, it was really a matter. We're going to talk about each of the goals and some things that happened around them, but looking at it from a broader perspective, it seems like Rochester had been struggling. They'd been sloppy. They'd been having some troubles with their sharpness. Saskatchewan hadn't necessarily been taking advantage, and then all of a sudden, Robert Church, three goals in 3-0-3, stretches the lead, and from there, it felt like Saskatchewan just grabbed that game by the throat.
Yeah, and they sure did. And, you know, the funny thing is just before that happened, I think it was 3-2 for Saskatchewan when Rochester scored a 6-on-5 goal on a delayed penalty. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple penalties on the play, so they still went to the power play. After that, they scored a power play goal from Jameson. They went up 4-3. And then there was another power play in there, and that's when Church went on his three-goal run, starting with a shorthanded goal. And it, you know, it was at a time where I thought, okay, Rochester might be stealing the momentum here, a key part of the game, and, you know, Saskatchewan just shut the door.
Well, so many times in a game, you'll see it, and you can just feel it coming, where one team is getting the best of the play, and they're not really taking advantage. Either the other goalie's making some big saves, or they're just not capitalizing, and it almost felt like one of those where Saskatchewan had the edge in the flow of play and the opportunities, and then Rochester, like you said, gets those goals from Resiteris with the extra attacker, then Jamieson with an absolutely gorgeous shot. That we saw the great angle from behind where he got a little twister action but still came near side. It was amazing. But it was all of a sudden they're up 4-3, and you're thinking, wow, they've been outplayed, they're ahead, and we know they can compete with this club.
Yeah, and also, up until that point when Church scored, it really seemed like Saskatchewan wasn't getting much offensively out of their 5-on-5 offense. I thought, you know, Rochester was doing a pretty good job of shutting them down. I mean, there were some transition goals, and I think McIntosh might have scored one of the first three. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once Church got his three goals, it was like, okay, the offense, the guys that like to score goals, are now awake, and that's when it's a scary thing. And like you said, especially when, you know, Saskatchewan was getting a lot of early chances. I thought they actually looked nervous early in the game. They weren't executing 2-on-1s. Guys were dropping balls that normally wouldn't. And then once they got those three quick goals, it just kind of felt like the pressure was off.
Yeah, a good point in the summary, because, I mean, Jeremy Thompson gets the first one, takes a pass from Evan Kirk, actually has somebody coming from bench transition with him, but pulls back and just rips one near side. Rochester gets a couple, including the Graham Hossack transition goal. And then Jeff Cornwall, in a typical Jeff Cornwall fashion. And then even the McIntosh goal was kind of out of character for him, because he's such an inside backdoor quick stick and inside banger grinder kind of guy, and he just sort of stepped out high and let one go. Yeah, so it was very unusual for them.
And you know, the typical goal that you see Saskatchewan getting is when, you know, Matthews comes up high, you think he's going to shoot, and he lays that hard high pass to, you know, Church or McIntosh on the back door, and all of a sudden they're slipping in the empty net. And Rochester did an excellent job of taking that away. And like you said, McIntosh's goal was not typical of the ones that you see. I can't remember who got the assist, but I know it wasn't Matthews. It was kind of a lazy flip pass as he cut inside. And then, then the Church goals were all unique too.
Yeah, it was Shatler that threw that one to McIntosh. And I remember noticing Mark Matthews wasn't even on the floor for that play.
Yeah. And you know, I too thought that a key for Rochester was to take away, you know, Matthews' 6 or 7 assists. And they did. I mean, yeah. I think he had a goal and 2 assists, but it still didn't matter. And I think a lot of that is because, you know, Church, you know, when he came to play and he got his 4 goals, and especially, you know, the 3 within about 3 minutes, that, that made a big difference.
So let's talk about those 3 goals. As you mentioned, in 3 minutes and 3 seconds of playing time, when there'd been a series of 2-goal runs. So the first one, he's shorthanded, kind of muscles through Eric Schuhl. Paul Dawson comes to help and took a bit of an odd angle, and actually, to me, gave Church a chance to get around him and eliminated Schuhl from being able to take a diagonal down towards the net. And it's again, you know, I mean, those are a couple of, I think Eric Schuhl's a very good defender that people don't really know that much about, but he's really solid. And Paul Dawson is a veteran who I think has been playing as well as ever in the second half of the season. And Church, who you never think of, or he doesn't look like a really athletic guy, but he showed his strength and his quick feet on that one.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. He doesn't look like a powerful guy, but sort of when he gets a chance to turn a corner, it almost looks to me like sometimes you don't realize how little you have to give him for him to score.
Yeah.
You know, when he just slightly turns the corner, it's like, oh, you're in trouble now, because it seems like whenever he gets in that area, kind of, you know, comes around the corner, that high slot, it doesn't matter if he's floating the shot, it always seems to find the back of the net. And I had that feeling as soon as he sort of turned the corner on that play. Mm-hmm. And I got the feeling that it was almost they're taking him for granted, thinking he's just going to try to kill some time. But, that was a huge goal, a shorthanded goal, just when you thought that Rochester could go up by 2.
I like the way you put it, that, you know, even if he floats it, he doesn't look like he's putting a lot on it, because you watch some guys. I mean, Cody Jamieson, we talked about that one shot that he put in the corner. Unbelievable. Mark Matthews just rips it from up top. I mean, you've got guys that just shoot the ball so hard, and you can see why a lot of their goals go in. But Church just kind of – he doesn't seem to shoot super hard. He doesn't do anything. I mean, some guys, you can see the deceptiveness in the way they move their hands. His – when he does a twister, he does something that's so subtle. He is maybe the most fluid player in the National Lacrosse League.
Yeah, no, he sure is. And you know, I noticed that on every one of his goals. I don't think he ripped any of them, but it just seems to find the spot. And it's not that hard. His shots aren't that hard. But part of it is his movement when he's coming from, you know, from left to right. And I think it's just the goalie's not sure exactly when he's going to shoot. And he keeps moving. And you know, more often than not, he puts it back to where he came from.
The second goal in that sequence was probably started, the sequence started with maybe the hardest shot the Church took, and it went wide and bounced off the backboards, comes straight out to Ben McIntosh. And the thing to me, watching it, going back and watching the video, is that Church broke to the net as McIntosh was grabbing it. McIntosh grabbed it with his back to the boards, kind of reached down behind and around him to grab the ball. It wasn't a huge play, but just the fact that he saw that McIntosh was getting it, and when he was getting it, he started to go. And we've talked about this a bit, that, you know, Billy D. Smith jumps out for a switch. Graham Hossack didn't necessarily look like he knew the switch was coming or expected the switch, and Church is gone, and by the time Hossack realizes it, it's too late. And it's so rare to see Graham Hossack chasing a play. He's usually, we talk about his size and his strength and how hard he hits and everything, but what makes him so great is he's always in position. And it was, I thought, really looked weird to see Graham Hossack chasing somebody down trying to get a piece of him.
Yeah, I thought when I saw that play live, I thought it was a miscommunicated switch. And you know, I know sometimes, even when I played D, sometimes you didn't want to switch. In fact, you know, there are different rules of thought. You know, some guys want to switch all the time, and some guys never want to switch. And to me, that looked like one that, you know, Billy D stepped up on the switch and, you know, caught Hossack by surprise. So I don't know if he felt he didn't need the switch or if it was just poor communication between the two of them, but I mean, it was only for a second. And that's all you need. That's the great thing about a good pick and roll. Yeah. You know, a guy, you know, loses his man for a second, and, you know, the good offensive players flip that pass over, and that's all you need is half a step on your defender. You, you know, you're closer to the net than your defender is, and they made him pay. And at that point in the game, I remember thinking, this is probably, you know, Rochester's first big mistake defensively. I thought they had made mistakes offensively in their turnovers. I mean, I thought early in the game, Saskatchewan did a great job forcing Rochester to turn over the ball on offense in dangerous spots, and that's why there was so much transition. But that was, they were still playing good defense, 5-on-5 defense, and that play was, I thought, that's the first time they've made a mistake, and they paid for it. And you know, that's the great thing about Saskatchewan. You always have to play a perfect game, because when you make a mistake, they're cashing in. They're that good.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, you say, oh, it was just for a second. And that's true as in terms of, as that's a saying. You say, oh, it's just a second. But if you actually break it down, it was way less than a full second. I mean, that's
A second really is an eternity when you lose your man. You know, it's probably a millisecond. I mean, I remember the day when we used to play, you'd grab onto a guy's sweater for a second. I don't think they're getting away with that now, but it used to be when you felt a guy pick on your back, you would try to grab him. I think the way the game's played now, the referees would call that in a second. And it's funny, too, because even one of the things Derek Keenan said to me before the game is, you know, we're talking about referees, how they're letting the play. And he goes, the one thing I hope they don't let teams get away with is grabbing, you know, the holding on defense. And he goes, I hate when teams do that. And, you know, I think right there, that would have been a good time to get away with a hold if you could.
I have two comments on that. One is another observation of Robert Church is he never put himself in a position to be held or to be grabbed. It was a little slip pick. And
yeah,
he
it was
just,
more of a slip pick where, he never got close enough. And, and that's the great thing about a slip pick is, it's like the offensive guy reads that switch and just goes – just turns quickly to the net.
My other one is watching Derek Keenan coach in the summer with the Brooklyn Redmen at the arena. I mean, there's no music. You can hear a lot of what they're yelling. And I tend to go in and watch some games from one of the penalty boxes so I can get a really close view. I like being down on the floor sometimes for games. And I can hear him calling, and I don't know. You don't always know what coaches are yelling at the refs, but what he yells a lot of the time is, "It doesn't take any skill to hold somebody." Like, you literally, that is exactly what he's saying. He says, "Let the offensive guys play." He loves the skill of the game. I mean, obviously, he likes a good defensive game. He's put together one of the great defenses in NLL history, but he thinks if you're a skill player, you should be allowed to play without being grabbed and clutched and hauled around.
Yeah, and I tend to agree, even though I'm coming from the other side of the coin. But and it's funny because I remember back in his playing days when he'd get pissed off, especially in the days when we were just starting kind of like the offense defense. And I remember he hated it when guys might be hammering him, and then he wouldn't get a chance to hammer them back because they weren't on offense. And I remember that used to annoy him so much.
Yeah, he liked going both ways on the floor.
Oh, yeah, and he was playing in a day when most of the teams were going both ways. I remember we had a few guys in our team that, would just play defense, and he just said, come on down, play some offense. why don't you come down,
The third goal in that sequence is interesting because it had been alternating. I mean, Saskatchewan scored first, the Thompson goal, and then Rochester gets two from Hoskins Shanks, and then Cornwall and McIntosh for Saskatchewan, then Resiteris and Jameson, as we talked about, for Rochester, then the first two Church goals, and Brendan Glasheen actually mentioned, that's four straight two-goal runs alternating between the two teams. And then Church has the ball, comes over the top, passes across to a cutting Jeff Shatler, and misses him completely with the pass, or Shatler missed it, or Shatler wasn't ready. And then watching the video, it looks like it just bounces off of Mark Matthews' leg, goes back towards Church, and he scoops it up. Luke Magnin is coming up towards the ball, towards Church, and Scott Campbell is there trying to come across, and Magnin did a pretty good job. Like, it's hard. You have to turn and as a defender and see, but he actually got in Scott Campbell's way and blocked Campbell from being able to get to Church. So Church slips by the two of them. But the thing that I love watching is Church, as he's grabbing that ball, he is turning because he sees where they are, and he basically runs Magnin into Campbell. And he is so aware and alert. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it was... it was a broken play, the way the bounce went, it just came right back to Church. But you're right that the first play when he picked up that ball, I don't know if he was smart enough that he was able to run the defenders in each other. I mean, that's a super clever play.
Yeah.
And, but at the time I remember just thinking, of all people, you don't want that ball to bounce to in that spot on the floor. Like, it was kind of high slot where he picked it up. And it was like, it's like you kind of know as soon as he got that ball, here comes a goal.
Yeah, and the thing, he heads down the slot, straight down, a little bit of a tilt to his left to open some space, because Shadler has gone down and is still on the edge of the crease. And Jake Withers comes across to Church, and I remember during the game, as you're announcing, you said something on the replay, like, the defender, which is Withers, is like half a step late getting there to affect his shot, and then it goes on, there's other things happening, and we talked about this before, that yes, Withers was a bit late getting there to affect the shot, but if Withers had gone early, Shatler was wide open, and Robert Church hits him with that pass, and Church is naked on the crease.
No, exactly.
Or Shatler, sorry.
No, you're right.
Yeah. It was an unbelievable sequence, and it really seemed like that is when things turned around, and Saskatchewan just kept it rolling with the next four goals. And something you pointed out to me when we were getting ready for this is Saskatchewan scored in the first about 2.5 minutes of every quarter. Thompson at the beginning, 2:34 into the first. McIntosh, 1:56 into the second. McIntosh again, 57 seconds into the third, taking a pass from Jeff Cornwall. And then in the fourth quarter, Ryan Keenan at 2:08. And those are just huge goals early in quarters.
Yeah. Especially, you know, the start of the third quarter, so the second half, because it was 6-4. You know, Rush had just had that 3-goal run by Church, and you felt that, okay, if, you know, Rochester has to score the next one, you know, to keep, you know, stay in this game, don't let that 3-goal run grow. And when, you know, Saskatchewan came out and scored quickly in the second half, then it was like, oh no, that's not helping Rochester. And then it went from bad to worse. It's, you know, Rochester scored 4 goals within about, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. And you know, and it seemed like 2 separate runs, because it was a 4-goal run there, but, you know, added up with a 3-goal run. And that was, you know, 7 straight for Rochester. And really, that's the difference in the game. From, you know, from that point on, I know they pulled Vince for just a few seconds, but it stopped the bleeding. He came back, and there wasn't a goal by, you know, Saskatchewan for a while. Rochester scored the next two, but, you know, the rest of the game they're trading goals, and trading goals isn't going to do you any good when you're, you know, down by about 6.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a great point. The 7-goal run and the final score is 16-9. You take that 10-minute stretch out. It's actually
it was less than that. It was well, I know. Church's goals were within about three minutes, and the other 4 goals were within 3 or 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. I know it wasn't all consecutive, but it was, if you think about it, it was about, you know, 3 minutes of that killed them in the, you know, late first half, and 3 or 4 minutes that killed them early in the second half. And so about 7 minutes where Rochester, you know, was just dominated, and that's it. That's the end.
So the obvious question from that is, well, actually, there's one more thing I want to mention. In that stretch between the goals by Church, Evan Kirk made a couple of key saves. One was a bounce shot through traffic by Austin Shanks. One was Joey Resiteric, in the shooter spot, clean look, where he's very dangerous. And Kirk made them look pretty simple. He didn't have, I think, a brilliant game. Kirk, I mean, he wasn't... It wasn't like one of those games where at the end you say, wow, that goalie stood on his head. But it was a game where he made all the key saves at all the key moments that he had to.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. In fact, I know there was at least twice in that game where he made a save and it led directly to a Saskatchewan goal. I know it was the Cornwall goal. That came off a save from Kirk, and, you know, the ball quickly went up the floor. I think it was Messenger got the breakaway. Cornwall scored on the rebound.
Yeah.
But then I think it might be the Shanks one that you're talking about, that Shanks got a nice scoring chance, Kirk made a save, and it went back up the floor, and they scored again. So, I mean, you see that in lacrosse all the time. But I remember thinking at the point where, and I think I said it on air, when Cornwall scored a tie at 2-2, it could have easily been 3-1 if Kirk didn't make that nice save on the other end. Yeah. And, you know, like I say, we see that in lacrosse all the time, but sometimes it goes unnoticed when you outshoot a team, you know, whatever it was, about 64 or 44, you think that Kirk had nothing to do, but he made some key saves at times, and key saves that led to goals for his team as well. And I think, you know, I think he did that against Calgary the week before. He got off to a terrible start in the second half against Calgary. Calgary scored about 3 or 4 goals, or 3 goals on their first 3 or 4 shots to tie up the game early in the second half. But after that, I thought Kirk settled in and played real well. So, you know, there's a lot of question marks about Kirk just because he doesn't have a lot of NLL playoff experience, you know, especially when you compare to Vince. You know, Vince was 18-8 in playoffs coming into that game, and Kirk was 3-2. So a world of difference in NLL playoff experience. But I think so far Kirk is answered the call. I know he's not getting a zillion shots on him like Vince is, but, you know, you just want to make those key saves, and he's doing it.
You mentioned Mike Messenger, and that made me think of that goal that he scored. And he has scored some of the prettiest goals this season in transition, some great plays, like great stick He's such a big, burly guy, but he's really fast. But on this one, he showed it was all about power, because Brad Gillies was right on him and actually kind of leaning on his back. He gets up on his back, and Messenger just kind of stands up, shakes Gillies off, and Gillies almost kind of falls into the crease, and then Messenger just powers it through Vince between the arm and body. Somebody said something about, they say speed kills, and Messenger showed it there. And I replied on Twitter, yeah, it helps to be really, really strong too.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, the funny thing I felt with Messenger that game is his shot, he was missing the net by miles. He yeah. had a couple of breakaways. The one that led to the Cornwall goal, he must have been 4 feet over the net on that shot. And then the second breakaway, he missed. And then that play where he finally scored, it almost looked to me like he said, I'm taking this right to the crease and shoveling it in the net, because, you know, it almost seemed like he knew that his outside shot wasn't working. And that time, you know, like, I'm just going to drive right into the crease. Like, very unlike what you saw, you know, the first goal of the game, you know, Jeremy Thompson, you know, stepping back and taking that outside shot. Well, we knew that wasn't working for Messenger that game, so he wanted to power his way right to the crease, and he scored it. That was a nice goal. I know it was late in the game, and, you know, I think it was a done deal already, but it was a nice goal still.
Yeah, I mean, that was the 15th goal for Saskatchewan with, you know, 7 minutes to play. So it wasn't a deciding factor, but it was just a great goal. So Rochester goes home. I thought you put it pretty well in the broadcast at the end when you said, you know, the momentum doesn't really carry over. We've seen games. I mean, when Calgary and Rochester played a few years ago in the Champions Cup, in the best of two series, basically with the mini game tiebreaker, Calgary beat Rochester, I think, relatively handily in the one game that Rochester won. And, I mean, there have been some blowouts in series where the other team comes back and it doesn't seem to affect them at all.
Yeah, and sometimes it's even better to get blown out because, you know, you lose that heartbreaking one-goal game or that overtime game, and you think back at all the little things that could have been the difference. You know, that one play, you know, if the one play when I hit the post, or if it went in, it could have, or if I had done this, and you haunt yourself with all the things you could have done to turn that around. But that one, you know, and I talked to one of the Rochester coaches after the game, and he says, well, at least we know we were terrible. Yeah. So sometimes that's a good thing, because nobody's going to fool themselves into saying we deserve that one, or, you know, we got robbed, or we had bad luck. They're going to say, okay, we got work to do. We really got to focus. And, you know, and I'm confident that they can. I'm not saying that they're going to win, but I don't think the momentum at this level of lacrosse and sports in general, like, you know, it's the same thing you see in hockey and NHL playoffs, one game momentum or there is no momentum game to game. I mean, these teams are that good. You know, it's not like guys are injured. If you know, Vince got hurt and had to leave halfway through the game, then I'd be worried. And, you know, but, you know, these guys are all going to come back, you know, with some determination. So, you know, I expect a different game.
As that game gets going, one of the question marks will be, is Sid Smith playing for Rochester? And I think in terms of just sheer on-floor defensive play, I mean, Rochester's got some guys who have stepped up. Graham Hossick is obviously huge. Paul Dawson, I think Billy D. Smith has actually done even though we noticed a couple of, you know, issues for him in that game, I think he's done a really nice job. Brad Gillies, Jake Withers has been great. I mean, they've got good defenders. Scott Campbell, Luke Magden, right? The whole group of them. But Sid Smith is a quiet leader, but he is one of the best leaders in lacrosse. And you don't get a chance to see it unless you're around a team quite a bit and pretty close. And I actually went out to the 2013 Man Cup as the Major Series Lacrosse media rep, communications rep. I went out to it and was with the Chiefs. And when you're there at practice every day and around the hotel and seeing it, Sid Smith is an unbelievable leader. And that is where I think they miss him more than anything.
Yeah, you know, definitely, you know, when you take a captain out of the lineup and like you said, he's got that quiet leadership skill. And I don't know you know, what he says in the dressing room or not, but on the floor, he plays a quiet game. I mean, I think actually Graham Hossack plays a lot like Sid Smith does. He's a younger version, but in the cause turnovers and just forcing guys to drop balls and picking up loose balls. I love Sid's game, in that respect. And, I have no idea. I know they said it's game to game, and they hinted that, he could be back this week, but who knows though, that could be for, he could be done for the season for all I know. That could just be, to keep Saskatchewan off guard.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I don't think they're losing a ton when they have to bring somebody in. It is really that leadership thing. Because I do think, Eric Shule, people don't really know, but he was fantastic last summer, had a real breakout season, and I think he's been very good when he's been forced in. The problem comes, I think, when you've got, Withers is a rookie, Graham Hossack's a third-year guy. Don't worry about him. But, Gillies is a young player. Again, a leader with the team, very good, but a young player. And then you throw in Shule and Magnin and Frank Brown, who I believe was the healthy scratch the other day. But, you have just – it's one more young player. And they're very good young players. But the reality is if you've only played a season or a season and a bit in the league – it's challenging to go up against Saskatchewan in a championship finals, no matter how calm and confident a player you are.
No, you're absolutely right. We were having some discussions about players to watch, for the broadcast, and somebody said Austin Shanks should be the player to watch for Rochester because he scored 5 goals earlier in the year. And I said, yeah, he had a great couple of games against Rochester, but you got to lean on a veteran. You don't want to go up to a rookie and say, you're the guy we're depending on to win this game. And not to say that, the player to watch for an NHL broadcast is the guy they're depending on, but I think it is the veterans that teammates look to show the leadership offensively, defensively, and just, by example. And as good as, I think Austin Shanks had a great rookie season, so was Eric Fennell and Withers. But I don't think Rochester's winning this championship depended on what either one of those guys do. And the funny thing is, Withers had a great game on the faceoff dot, but it didn't really make any difference. I think he was 21 for 29. And, and sometimes you can throw something like that out if a team has sort of decided to concede some face-offs just to make sure there's no fast breaks. And I wouldn't doubt that, Saskatchewan, might have done that at times.
It's interesting, actually. I thought watching that it was pretty clear Jeremy Thompson knew he had to get a jump because from the first face-off, he actually – We were zoomed right in. We got to see it. He jumped the first faceoff, and they just didn't call it. And then I think two of the next three, he jumped early as well. And I'm not sure how many violations there were on the faceoffs, but it was a lot because
There were.
Yeah, sure. That's Withers getting into your head a bit.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I'm sure Saskatchewan's going into that game thinking, their game plan is not revolving around, we have to win the faceoffs.
No.
I think when you play a guy like Withers, you sort of say, well, yeah, if we can be 50-50, great, but we're not conceding that can't be part of our success plan, is that because things could go wrong.
Saskatchewan has, they won back-to-back, or the Rush won back-to-back championships, Edmonton and then Saskatchewan. They lose last year. They're within a game here of winning now. So that would be 3 championships in 4 years if they can close this one out. And it's by no means a foregone conclusion. Like we said, Rochester's going to come back and battle. But if they do get it, boy, they are in a pretty good position going forward as well. This fall in the draft, obviously they're going to lose a couple of players in the expansion draft. This fall they have 3 first-round picks, 5th, 10th, and 11th overall. Next fall they have 3 first and 2 second-round picks. In the 2019 draft, when there may be more expansion next year, there may be more drafts, but they could lose players. They can sign free agents. They've got Nick Findlay on the practice squad, is ready to step in, play a bigger role. they have a wealth of talent, and it's hard to imagine them not competing for Champions Cups for at least, I would say, another 4 years.
Yeah, you know, they remind me, now, if they win this,
yes,
then it'll be reminiscent of the Edmonton Oilers back in the when they won their four cups in 5 years. Yeah. And remember, the one that they missed was when Steve Smith scored a goal on his own net. Yeah. You know, he hit the back of Grant Fuhr, and it was Calgary beat them out. And you know, other than that, they would have, you know, they were good enough to be 5-5, but yeah, it was like they were a dynasty with a blip in the middle. Yeah. I kind of think that there's a chance that the Saskatchewan Rush, you know, are going through the same thing. You know, they are a dynasty. They you know, they could very well win 3 and 4 years, and you know, and we know they'll be the favorite, you know, starting next year. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a very good chance we look back at last year and say, well, that was a blip.
Yeah.
And who knows? We may look back at the odd, you know, goal that put the game in overtime and say, well, that was the Steve Smith moment.
Yeah.
For the Saskatchewan Rush.
Yeah, very, very, as you're saying, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, that is the Steve Smith moment. I want to move on and talk, if you got some time and are inclined, I'd like to talk about Ontario Junior A. That was a really interesting discussion of that, but obviously you've got a close connection with your son, Devlin, playing backup goalie right now for Mimico. You did the Junior A power rankings for IL Indoor last year, and you're going to continue this year.
And I will be doing it this year.
Yeah, we're starting very soon.
Been a little bit busy to start with the NLL, but I will get back on that, maybe even this weekend, I hope.
Nice. Well, I think it's a fascinating league this year, and you obviously see a lot of it. There are 9 competitive teams, I think. Peterborough and Barrie are both young. Peterborough is really in tough. They had a lot of guys graduate from a team that missed the playoffs and a lot of quite good players for a team that was actually very competitive down the stretch last year when everyone came back. All of those guys pretty much graduated. They've got very few veteran players, and they are building. They do have a midget team that won Bantam Provincials a couple of years ago. They're going to be very good eventually, but that's a couple of years down the road. Barrie, another very young team. I think the other 9 teams, it seems like anyone can win on any night.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think eventually you'll see, you know, the cream rise to the crop or to the top. And, you know, I got to think, even though Six Nations is off to a very mediocre start, you got to think that, you know, when they get Tahoka back, that's going to help. I was at the game when Mimico played at Six Nations, and, like, Austin Stats was phenomenal in his first game. It was like he must have had 15 to 20 shots in that game.
Yeah.
And, you know, he only scored 4. I thought he had about 8 when the game was over, but it was only 4. So, you know, I think they'll be good despite, you know, a slow start. You know, they'll be getting, you know, and not only will they get Tahoka, but I could see them, you know, they'll pick up guys here and there. Brampton, we know Brampton's going to be good. I mean, Brampton's, you know, got Teat and, you know, Clark Peterson, and, you know, so they're going to be good. And Mimico's got same defense they had last year, you know, and they were a pretty dominant team defensively last year. They've missed a few. They only lost 2 guys from the team last year, and they had a very key players, you know, with Tanner Thompson and Andrew Q, you know, both big scorers.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've had a few guys come up from midget and junior B who have, you know, done well so far. So, yeah, I'm shocked so far at what Beaches has done.
Yeah.
I can't see that lasting. Like, they went 4-0 to start. I think they lost their last game against Six Nations. And, you know, Burlington's looked pretty good to start. So, yeah, I do agree. You're gonna have a battle for those playoff spots. I think St. Catharines will be improved. I mean, they beat Six Nations. I don't think many of the Six Nations starters were out that game. But anytime you beat any team 5-2, let alone the defending Minto Cup champions, you must have the ability to play some defense. So, yeah, I think you're right in your call that, you know, Barrie and you know, Peterborough will definitely be on the outside.
Yeah.
But I sort of still think when the dust settles, you know, you're going to see Brampton, Six Nations near the top. Maybe Mimico might be not far behind them. And you know, Burlington always sort of disappoints me, though. Yeah. You know, I think they're a very good team, but their playoff success in the last, I don't think they've won a playoff game in 5 or 6 years. You know,
they certainly haven't won a playoff series in quite a while. And not many games.
Yeah, I shouldn't say a playoff game. A playoff series they have. You know, but I can't remember if Mimico didn't play them last year, but Mimico swept them the year before. Yeah. And so they've for a team that looks like they're a contender, you know, through most of the season, they've been disappointing in the playoffs. Yeah. But for the regular season, especially early in the regular season, when teams are just getting their guys back, I find it's a real exciting time the first few weeks, because you still don't know who's who, and you know, like I said, Brampton didn't get and Peterson until their last game, and even though they've got off to quite a good start without them, they're going to be even better now that they have them.
I think the thing for Brampton is, do they feel confident in their goaltending? I mean, last year they had Tyler Smith in the playoffs, and they were, you know, they did obviously fairly well, but ultimately fell short of making the Minto that they were hosting. And they were looking for goalies. They were trying to get some goalies. I mean, I know they were trying to get Kevin Orleman, and he wound up going
out to Okotoks. Yeah, apparently they tried hard to get Orleman last year, and they couldn't pull it off. And I know in the series against Mimico, I think that series went 7 games, and there was only one game where the starting goalie finished the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're having problems when, you know, you're pulling your goalie 6 out of 7 games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was a big difference between Mimico and Brampton. I thought Hutchcraft had a great series, and you know, Brampton didn't have a clear number one. And, mm-hmm. you know, I said the same thing about the Buffalo Bandits, you know, about a month ago is, you know, they didn't have a clear number one goal. You might have thought it was Bouquet, but then they went with Higgins, I think, in the, you know, last game, the do-or-die game. So when you don't have a clear number one, then, you know, things aren't going well.
Yeah. The Beaches are an interesting story, because they started out with wins over Barrie and Peterborough, but then they did beat Orangeville.
I think they beat Orangeville, yeah.
And they beat Kitchener-Waterloo, who have been very good, and they beat KW 10-4. Then they do lose to the Arrows, but they have, first of all, they've got, I think, a nice tandem of goalies, Bailey Brown and Jackson Brown. I actually saw Bailey Brown play for Gold Star Tel Aviv over in the Alice Rebeski in Prague.
Now, are they brothers?
No, not related at all. Which is odd, right? Usually in lacrosse, they are brothers. You look at, I mean, in Peterborough and Whitby and Toronto and Six Nations and everywhere.
The Orleman brothers.
Oh, yeah. There's brothers everywhere. But no, they're not. But I think Bailey is really good. But they also, I mean, they've got Josh Dawick, who's just a burgeoning star.
He's off to a great start.
He really is. And some guys back, Jack Kelly, Tristan Hanna. The big addition, too, is Lane Smith, who has 12 goals already in 5 games, and he is an absolute sniper. They picked him up from Six Nations, from the Rebels, actually, he mostly played. And he has a couple of years of Arena Lacrosse League experience. Boy, they have a pretty nice little club. And I'll tell you, Corson Keeley has 1 goal in his 4 games with the Beaches this year, but he scored the first goal of the season for the Peterborough Lakers Senior A team last night. He was a call-up. There were 13 regulars out of the lineup for Peterborough, so they had a bunch of call-ups against Oakville, and he scored the first goal. He is a brother of J.P. Keeley up in the Ottawa area, who, of course, plays for the New England Black Wolves a bit and ripped it up for the Whitby Steelhawks this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they are off to a great start. You know, they got the coaching, you know, with Glenn Clark.
Yeah.
And, you know, I spoke to him in the offseason. He was pretty positive about, you know, what he had coming back this year. I'm still like, you know, I've got to see a longer or more games before I'm going to say I'm a believer in them, because I think they got off to a pretty decent start last year, too. Yeah. And then they sort of fell back a little bit. But, yeah, you know, so far, so good.
Yeah.
But, you know, looking at the top of the standings right now, I think it is Beaches and Burlington. I don't expect them to be at the top at the end of the year, that's for sure.
No. I do want to throw a shout out to one of my favorite players in the OLA Junior A League, Mitch Gustafson for the Beaches, who he is.
Oh, I know the family very well.
Oh, they call it the Gus Bus, right? That you get on, and he is an absolute grinder. What a beauty. He is fast enough to run around you. He's much more inclined to run through you. He's a defender. He runs in transition. He does it all. I'm sure he's their captain this year. He's got to be. And yeah, he is – oh, what a leader.
He's a number one chirper too, for
yeah.
sure. Yeah. Now, his older brother played a few years for me in Mimico. And so I got to know the family – really well, and I remember when Brett was just a little guy tagging along, and so he's definitely put on the size and he can play the tough guy role if needed. But I've noticed too that he has been putting in some goals. So yeah, I think he's a key guy in that team, and I love the way he plays as well.
I want to talk about Mimico a little bit. You bleed the double blue of Mimico. You're always on Twitter, sharing Mimico stories and things. And it's such a great traditional program that's really revitalized. And I'm a big fan of DJ Cleveley coming in as the coach.
Yeah.
And of course your son Devlin is the backup goalie, and he's a very solid young goalie, but he's in a situation where Riley Hutchcraft came out in the draft a year early last year, was drafted by the Toronto Rock, and he is, I think, arguably the best goalie in the league this year. He's certainly among the best goalies in the league. So Devlin's not going to play a ton. He's played about 35 minutes so far. But what's the situation like for a young goalie like that? Is that kind of an ideal situation to learn behind somebody like Hutchcraft? I know Devlin wants to play. Every goalie wants to play.
Yeah, he definitely wants to play. And don't believe all the stats you see, because I saw in the game of Six Nations, Devlin pretty much played the whole game.
They
pulled him out for a couple of minutes. Hutch went in. But then Devlin went back. So okay. I saw, on the box score, it said that Devlin played 35 minutes and Hutch played the rest. But it was Devlin played all but about 4 minutes.
Okay.
But, I think you just got to be ready to play. And I think Devlin's, fine with that. Yeah, he wants to play for sure. But I think it would be different if he didn't love the Mimico team. Like, he loves being part of the Mimico team. And that's one of the things that I still love about lacrosse as opposed to hockey is, in lacrosse, you got a lot of players are playing for the community they grew up in, or, the kids that they played with their whole lives. And that really means something. And hockey, it seems so mercenary where kids go from team to team to team, and the team really has nothing to do with the community. But I know in Mimico there is such a pride, for what your team, what your community can do. So I think it might be different if that wasn't the case. But I think that's definitely a drawing force, because Devlin wants to play for Mimico. I'm sure he would love to play every game if he could. And and it is Hutch's last year. Devlin's got a few years after this. But if it wasn't your community, maybe you'd be jumping somewhere else. Probably in a heartbeat you would be, because I know Devlin could go other places and be a starter. And there was, some interest expressed earlier in the year about going out west. But I think ultimately, I think he preferred to stay in Mimico. And, also knowing that, they've got a very good squad too. Now, the other thing is that, like last year, he got pretty good. I think he was treated more than fairly by, Steve Toll. Devlin probably started about six games, but he missed about five games on his own because of high school graduation and prom and all that kind of stuff that, went on with that. So I'm hoping that he gets to play, more than he has to start the season so far. But you can't argue with Hutch the last couple of games. He's held Six Nations to five goals, I believe, and then buried to five goals the next night. So, I know as a coach, when your goalie comes off a game like that, you want to go back with the same goalie that you just had. And, so I'm sure they'll probably have games where they fit Devlin in, and then there might be times where they give Hutch a break. I mean, over the last couple of games, I would agree with you, Hutch might he has shown to be one of the best goalies, if not the best goalie in the league, over this last weekend.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, it's not like you mentioned those games where Hutchcraft hasn't been allowing a lot of goals, and it hasn't been like 15-5 blowouts where it was,
it's been 6-5,
yeah. 6-5 and 5-4.
6-5, something like that, right?
Yeah, 5-4 over Six Nations and then 6-5 over Barrie. So every one of those saves was critical.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a lot different when you allow four goals when your team has scored 15. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a relaxing, allowed four goals. But yeah, when it's a 5-4 game, I was up in six. Obviously, I wasn't at the game on Saturday because of the NLL game, but I was at Six Nations on Thursday. And I'll tell you, with the amount of shots they were getting, I thought I was amazed when I looked at the box score Saturday to see that they only scored four goals. And the first thing I looked at was to see if Stats played, because I just assumed that he wasn't playing. I know he didn't play their first game, and he did, and he had a couple goals, so he had two out of the four, which isn't bad. But from what I heard, from the game report, was that the Mimico defense were just laid a beating on him whenever they could, and you really have to do that if you want Austin Stotts to not kill you.
Yeah, you have to do something because Stotts is a girl. I mean, for anyone who isn't familiar with this league, Austin Stotts is there. Jeff Teat is there. I mean, Clark Patterson has 14 points in two games, and Teat has 15 for Brampton. There are some amazing players. Tohoka Nanticoke will be back, as you mentioned. And there are lots of other fantastic players. Ryan Lanchbury in Burlington is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, there's another one that's great. Yeah, they've got a lot of high-end talent in Burlington.
Yeah.
And, and at times, like watching Stotts the other day, he looks like a man playing against the kids. I mean, he just looks so dominant. And I still say that he shoots as good as anyone I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He's got such a great shot.
Well, I just remember watching him in the MSL playoffs a couple of years ago when Six Nations was in that series, and they had Cody Jamieson was out for the most part, had a miracle comeback, and honestly was was one of, I think, the great comeback stories in all of Canadian sports history, all of sport history. But he was out for quite a bit. Johnny Palace was out with a concussion. Jordan Durston had hurt his knee. He was out for the playoffs in the Man Cup. And Austin Stotts stepped in as an 18-year-old and was unbelievable.
With like 3 years still left in junior.
Yeah. And was, for much of the playoffs, I mean, that was an incredible comeback because Peterborough Lakers got ahead 3-0 in that series, and you thought, oh, it's over. There's no way without Jamieson, Thurston, Palace, and a couple other guys. I mean, they had like Brody Merrill playing forward. And Brody's a great player, but he's not a forward these days. They had another one of their lefty defenders came up. I'm just trying to remember. It was Briar Jonathan was playing forward. Again, terrific player. He's not a forward at that level. They had to play. And they came back and won four games straight. Now, it coincided with Cody Jamieson coming back. But Austin Stotts, he looked like a man then. He was 18 years old.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I think I just read a tweet the other day that he's broken Cody Jamieson's record for goals in a junior A career. I assume that's got to be goals for Six Nations players, because I think the records from the old days for goals in a career were ridiculous back when teams were scoring 25 goals a game regularly. But Stotts has scored, I think it was 202 goals to break Cody James's record. So you're in good company.
Yeah, Cody was pretty good as a junior too.
Yeah.
Well, we've got way off the NLL topic, but I love talking Junior A as well, and all the different leagues. There's so much going on across the country and across the world now in box lacrosse, and really enjoyed chatting with you. Thanks so much for taking the time. And
excellent, Stanford.
And
it's always good talking with you.
Yeah, and have fun at the game this weekend when you make the shorter trip this time down to Rochester.
I'm looking forward to it, and not that I'm cheering for any team, but I really would like to see this series go three games. Since we've gone to this format, the true two out of three each team has won two straight. So I'd like to see it go three games and make one more trip back to Saskatoon, you know, before the season ends.
Yeah, as announcers, we do stay neutral, obviously, and you don't cheer for anyone. But I often, like, at the end of a game, if it's close and it's a great game, I'll be like, I just want this to go to overtime. So if somebody's down, I'm almost actively cheering for that team to score and give us a little extra time. And same thing in the series, right?
I heard, I think it was James Duffy from TSN was on the radio and talking about how people say how announcers have their favorite teams. He goes, anyone who knows announcers know we only cheer for what's best for us.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great, Duffy is so funny. But it's pretty true. I mean, overtime's exciting. And a third game, a do or die game, winner take all, that's exciting.
No, that'd be great.
Thanks so much for your time.
Okay, Stanford, thanks. Bye.
All right, lacrosse friends, that will just about wrap things up for this episode of Box La Beat on NLL Radio. Again, you can always catch it as well on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. It's been a real pleasure chatting with Brian Shanahan, one of the great analysts in lacrosse. Some terrific insight and just a lot of fun talking about the game. We talk all the time and really enjoy it. I hope you enjoyed getting to share one of our conversations about the National Lacrosse League Finals and OLA Junior A and all things lacrosse. I am Stephen Stamp, your host for the show. There is another episode coming next week, and it will either be the penultimate version, and we will then have a wrap-up show after what will have been a three-game National Lacrosse League Cup Finals, or we're going to wrap up the season next week if the Saskatchewan Rush are able to finish things off. Either way, it will be an exciting week next week here on Box Beat on NLL Radio. Thank you so much, lacrosse friends, for being with me. We'll see you next week.